Say it with flowers. Getting the words right can be so tricky, but with a big bunch of peonies, you can let anyone know you're grateful, you're sympathetic, you like them, and you're sorry at times, very, very sorry. But if you know what goes on in the trade, flowers can carry other darker messages too, of poisons, exploited labour, pollution, and extravagant carbon miles. Rita Feldman is the founder and education director of the Sustainable Floristry Network, set up in Australia to try to persuade flower sellers worldwide to clean up the trade. And Rita joins me now on the show. Welcome to Late Night Live.
Thank you, David. Thanks very much for having me on.
Those peonies, where do you think they might have come from?
Well, that very much depends on where you're buying them and at what time of the year. One of the problems that we have in the flower industry is that, well, it's these days we can now source flowers year round and we don't necessarily follow seasonal cycles. So at one time of the year, they may be grown, you know, I'm in Melbourne, we've got the flower growing hub of Australia, not far out of Melbourne. And at other times of the year, they could have come from the opposite side of the world when, of course, it's spring in the Northern Hemisphere.
And people will pay the price of flying a flower from the other side of the world to their suburban florist.
Absolutely. I think, you know, flower consumers have very much gotten used to having spoiled for choice in many ways about having availability all the way, all through the year. And in many cases, flowers that have come from the other side of the world are often cheaper or certainly on par or comparable with prices in Australia. So we often, you know, see, particularly in big events and weddings and things like that, where really big budgets are being spent on flowers, that people are willing to pay whatever it takes. And they can be really high prices, but the wedding and events industry is something else, and that's something that really exploded probably from sort of the start of the social media onwards. So yes, absolutely, people are willing to pay very big prices for flowers to get exactly what they want when they want it.
Obviously, when we think of flowers grown overseas, you know, the tulip fields of the Netherlands comes to mind, but where are the really big flower-growing centres in the world now?
So in recent times, we've seen a big shift in major production zones to countries, particularly Kenya, increasingly Ethiopia. Those countries are servicing countries in Europe, while over in the States, a lot of the suppliers and the flowers are grown in South America, in Ecuador, in Colombia.
And where are most of the foreign flowers coming from that end up in Australia?
So in Australia, we're now sourcing flowers from all over the world. We've got a long history of trade with Southeast Asia. A lot of orchids have been coming in for many, many years. I can remember back as far as the 70s, orchids were coming in from Malaysia. Today, we can get flowers from Kenya, particularly roses. Increasingly Ecuador, and they're not always coming in a straight line either. They're not necessarily coming straight across.
How do you mean?
So flowers rarely travel in a straight line. There's usually some sort of intermediary. In this case, flowers are often bypassing the Netherlands, which is the major, where all the big flower auctions are, and then they're sent out to different wholesalers here. So often you'll find that the travel footprint of a bunch of flowers can be a lot further than the crow flies.
And none of this has to be declared. There's no restrictions on any of this. And what happens when a flower reaches the Australian border? I mean, I thought we were incredibly fussy about what living things we let into this country.
We are, to a degree. Australia has fairly strict biosecurity regulations, although recently there was a move to remove the devitalisation requirements for incoming flowers. Devitalisation is a process where flowers are basically you know, the life's taken out of them by immersing them in glyphosate solution. So you're effectively killing the plant material so that it can't be propagated here. But we also do have other fumigation practices, obviously, to try and stop bugs.
Well, just a second. So a bunch of flowers is... It comes with glyphosate. I mean, we've been talking on this show about the horrors of Roundup.
Yes.
So this is another way that glyphosate gets into our houses.
This is a...
On cut flowers.
Yes, this is a post-harvest treatment that has been in place for a very long time. A lot of money goes into breeding and propagation, and so there are plant breeders' rights around particular varieties, and they don't want them propagated here. So... obviously, that can also introduce disease as well. So there are a number of procedures that do take place.
But what does this mean for florists who are handling bunches of these flowers that have been through a glyphosate solution? They're handling them all day, every day, 7 days a week, month in, month out. What precautions do they have to take?
Well, there's no... precautions that they have to take. In fact, it's one of those subjects that sort of escaped attention for a very long time. The pesticide load on cut flowers and the risks that people working, you know, florists working with pesticide treated flowers are exposed to. There've been studies in Belgium that have shown that a huge number of these pesticides and the residues pass through the skin and into the bloodstream of florists. But the pesticide problems actually start before that, because we know that, you know, pesticide toxicity issues are greatest for those people who work in horticulture and who are exposed to pesticides at the point of application, in this case, flower farm workers.
Are you also concerned with the labour conditions of the flower growers in places like Kenya, Ethiopia, South America?
Yeah, look, absolutely. One of the problems is that the supply chains can be very opaque. So often there's very little information about how farms operate, the conditions that workers are exposed to. And I guess we sort of have to start to ask questions when imported flowers that have travelled such a vast distance on an aeroplane, how they can be on par with local prices or even cheaper. So at some point, somebody is missing out.
Is there any way that we, customers, can tell whether the flowers are grown here or there?
No. The short answer is no. A lot of information about where flowers' provenance is lost when we start to hand them. Packaging may come in and it may state the country of origin. There's no country of origin requirements like there are with fruit and vegetables. And what we do, of course, in the workplace is there's a lot of opening up of bunches, rebunching. A lot of wholesalers will put different sleeves on them. And so that information about where the flower has come from is regularly lost.
Yep. I do love the expression rebunching, by the way. But there's also, from your papers, I see, there's a problem with this green foam that florists use. I haven't seen this. What is it that you're worried about here?
So the green foam that florists use, or floral foam as we know it in the industry, is one of those products that has just simply escaped regulation in its entire history. It's a product that wasn't designed for purpose. It was a byproduct of early plastic experimentation, and it was literally a case of maybe this will hold flowers and conduct water at the same time. What we now know about the product is that it sheds vast numbers of microplastics. And of course, we use it in conjunction with the water system. So in some ways, and if we look at, you know, National Plastics Plan in Australia, those types of plastics, those fragmentable microplastic producing plastics, are rated as the very worst, and single use, I might add. The very worst plastics. It is one of those products that should be banned, but like I said, it has simply escaped regulation or attention for a very long time.
On ABC Radio National, this is Late Night Live. I'm David Marr. I'm talking to Rita Feldman, founder of the Sustainable Floristry Network. Now, Rita, we've canvassed all the bad news. How is the network working to fix these problems?
So the Sustainable Floristry Network, we're a new education organisation for florists. So we find in the industry, education's not necessarily a prerequisite for entering the industry. Only around a half of florists do any kind of education before entering. Most learn on the job, and an increasingly large proportion are self-taught. So we came along specifically to introduce a new type of training and very much focused on teaching sustainability to florists.
Okay, let's dig into that. I mean, what behaviours need to be changed?
Well, understanding the emissions that can be associated with some flowers. Every bunch of flowers, every bucket of flowers is grown under different conditions, or every variety. So, I mean, I did a wedding, you know, 15 years ago, and more recently applied we have some data around roses grown in hothouses and worked out that the roses from the wedding that I did contributed 5 tons of emissions to climate change. Yeah, and that's just from the roses for the wedding.
What's been the response to your work, not just here but overseas?
It's been interesting. Just recently, late last year, we ran a pilot with Fluorop Interflora in Europe, and
that's big time.
Yeah, it is. It is. It was really exciting for us, because what that says is that the mainstream industry is really starting to take these issues seriously. And there is a lot of work that is being done throughout the supply chain, certainly with big producers in the Northern Hemisphere, to really improve their practices. So while there is bad news, there is also a lot of good work. And I guess our job is to alert people to the good work that is being done.
Wouldn't one of the best things florists could do is be upfront with their customers and say, these are locally grown, these are foreign grown?
Absolutely. That's one of our principles, is communicate with community. And of course, that includes their customers and directing them to more sustainable purchase. Telling them about seasonality is the number one driver when it comes to more sustainable flowers. Field grown, local, these are all factors, and of course, wherever possible, chemical free.
So you are asking florists to be brave, to face their customers and say, this is not the right time of year for tulips. We will have tulips when tulips bloom in Australia.
Well, that's where we need our consumers to step in and understand that beauty exists in a range of forms, and perhaps that some of the varieties that we've always considered to be the most beautiful, opening our mind to different versions of what good is, what a good flower is, what a good flower arrangement is, and what beauty can be. Because if a flower can be grown that can support wildlife species and promote biodiversity, well, that in my eyes is the perfect flower.
Rita, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you very much, David.
I've been talking to Rita Feldman, founder and education director of the Sustainable Floristry Network, set up in Australia, working to persuade flower sellers worldwide to clean up the trade. This is Late Night Live.